30 guests sat down to the banquet that Governor Clanehans gave to welcome his successor. All the most important men in the administration of the colony, together with their wives, were seated around the long board. From the place of honour, Petrus van der Velde gazed with delighted anticipation down the length of the rosewood table, above which hung massive chandeliers, each burning 50 perfumed candles. They lit the great hall as if it was day, and sparkled on the silverware and crystal glasses. For months now, ever since sailing from the coast of Trincomalee, van der Velde had been forced to subsist on the swill and offal cooked on the galleon and then on the coarse fare that the English pirates had provided for him. Now his eyes shone and saliva flooded his mouth as he contemplated the culinary extravaganza spread before him. He reached for the tall glass in front of him and took a mouthful of the rare wine from Champagne. The tiny seething bubbles tickled his palate and spurred his already unbridled appetite. Van der Velde considered this a most fortunate posting, for which his wife's connection in the Council of 17 was to be thanked. Positioned here at the tip of Africa, a constant procession of ships passed in both directions, bringing the luxuries of Europe and the Orient into Table Bay. They would want for nothing. Silently he cursed Clanehans for his long-winded speech of welcome, of which he had heard barely a word. All his attention was on the array of silver dishes and chargers that were laid before him one after another. They were little suckling pigs in crisp suits of golden crackling, barons of beef running with their own rich juices, set around with steaming ramparts of roasted potatoes, heaps of tender young pullets and pigeons and ducks and fat geese, 5 different types of fresh fish from the Atlantic, cooked 5 different ways, fragrant with the curries and spices of Java and Kandy, and further India, tall pyramids of the huge clawless crimson lobsters that abounded in the southern ocean, a vast array of fruits and succulent vegetables from the company gardens, and sherbets and custards and sugar dumplings and cakes and trifles and confiture, and every sweet delight that the slave chefs in the kitchens could conceive. All this was backed by stalwart ranks of cheese brought by company ships from Holland, and jars of pickled North Sea herring, and smoked sides of wild boar and salmon. In contrast to this superabundance, the service was all of delicate blue and white pattern. Behind each chair stood a house slave in the green uniform of the company, ready to recharge glass and plate with nimble, white-gloved hands. Would the man never stop talking and let them at the food? Van der Velde wondered, and smiled and nodded at Clanehans' inanities. At last, with a bow to the new governor, and a much deeper one to his wife, Clanehans sank back into his chair, and everyone looked expectantly at van der Velde. He gazed around at their asinine faces, and then, with a sigh, rose to his feet to reply. 2 minutes will do it, he told himself, and gave them what they expected to hear, ending jovially, "In conclusion, I want only to wish Governor Clanehans a safe return to the old country, and a long and happy retirement." He sat down with alacrity and reached for his spoon. This was the first time the burghers had been privileged to witness the new governor at table, and an amazed and respectful silence fell upon the company as they watched the level in his soup bowl fall like the outgoing tide across the mud flats of the Zuid Zee. Then, suddenly realizing that when the guest of honour finished one course, the plates would be changed and the next course served, they fell to in a frenzied effort to catch up. There were many stout trenchermen amongst them, but none to match the governor, especially when he had had a head start. As his soup bowl emptied, every bowl was whisked away and replaced with a plate piled high with thick cuts of sucking pig. The first 2 courses were completed in virtual silence, broken only by slurping and gulping. During the 3rd course, Clanehans rallied, and, as host, made a valiant attempt to revive the conversation. He leaned forward to distract van der Velde's attention from his plate. "I expect that you will wish to deal with the matter of the English pirates before any other business," he asked, and van der Velde nodded vigorously, although his mouth was too full of succulent lobster to permit a verbal reply. "Have you decided yet how you will go about their trial and sentencing?" Clanehans inquired lugubriously. Van der Velde swallowed noisily before he replied, They will be executed, of course. But not before their captain, this notorious corsair Francis Courtney, reveals the hiding place of the missing company cargo. I would like to convene a tribunal immediately for this purpose. Colonel Schroeder coughed politely, and Van der Velde glanced at him impatiently. Yes? You wanted to say something? Out with it, then. Today I had an opportunity to inspect the work proceeding on the Chasteel fortification, sir. The good Lord alone knows when we will be at war with England again, but it may be soon. The English are thieves by nature, and pirates by vocation. It is for these reasons, sir, that the 17 in Amsterdam have placed the highest priority on the completion of our fortifications. That fact is spelled out very clearly in my orders and my letter of appointment to the command of the Kasteel. Every man at the table looked grave and attentive at the mention of the sacred 17, as though the name of a deity had been invoked. Schroeder let the silence run on for a while to make good his point. Then he said, "The work is very much behind what their excellencies have decreed." Major Lowton, the outgoing garrison commander, interjected, "It is true that the work is somewhat behindhand, but there are good reasons for this." The construction was his prime responsibility, and Governor van der Velde's eyes switched to his face. He placed another forkful of lobster in his mouth. The sauce was truly delicious, and he sighed with pleasure as he contemplated another 5 years of meals of this order. He must certainly buy the chef from Kleinhans before he sailed. He formed his features into a more solemn pattern as he listened to Lowton making his excuses. "I have been hampered by a shortage of labour. The most regrettable revolt among the slaves has left us severely undermanned," he said lamely, and van der Velde frowned. "Precisely the point I was about to make," Schroeder picked up smoothly. "If we are so short of men to meet the expectations of the 17, would we be wise to execute 24 strong and able-bodied English pirates instead of employing them in the workings?" Every eye at the table turned to van der Velde to judge his reaction, waiting for him to give them a lead. The new governor swallowed, then used his forefinger to free a shred of lobster leg caught in his back teeth before he spoke. "Courtney cannot be spared," he said at last, "not even to work on the fortifications. According to Lord Cumbrae, whose opinion I respect," he gave the buzzard a seated bow, "the Englishman knows where the missing cargo is hidden. Besides which, my wife and I," he nodded towards Katinka, who sat between Kleinhans and Schroeder, "have been forced to suffer many indignities at his hands." "I quite agree," said Schroeder. "He must be made to tell all he knows of the missing bullion. But the others? Such a waste to execute them when they are needed on the walls, don't you think, sir? They are, after all, dull-witted cattle with little understanding of the gravity of their offence, but with strong backs to pay for it." Van der Velde grunted noncommittally. "I would like to hear the opinion of Governor Kleinhans on this matter," he said, and filled his mouth again, his head lowered on his shoulders, and his small eyes focused on his predecessor. Sagely, he passed on the responsibility of making the decision. Later, if there were repercussions, he could always unload a share of the blame. "Of course," said Governor Kleinhans with an airy wave of the hand, "prime slaves are selling for almost 1,000 guilders a head at the moment. Such a large addition to the company purse would commend itself highly to their excellencies. The 17 are determined that the colony must pay for itself and not become a drain on the company exchequer." All present gave this their solemn consideration. In the silence, Katinka said in ringing crystal tones, "I, for one, will need slaves for my household. I would welcome the opportunity to acquire good workers, even at those exorbitant prices." "By international accord and protocol, it is forbidden to sell Christians into slavery," Schroeder pointed out, as he saw the prospects of procuring labour for his fortifications beginning to recede. "Even Englishmen." "Not all the captured pirates are Christians," Kleinhans persisted. "I saw a number of black faces among them. Negro slaves are much in demand in the colony. They are good workers and breeders. Would it not be a most desirable compromise to sell them for guilders, to please the 17? We could then condemn the English pirates to lifelong hard labour. That could be used to hasten the completion of the works, also to please the 17. Thunderfelder grunted again, and scraped his plate noisily to draw attention to the fact that he was ready to sample the beef. He pondered these conflicting arguments while a freshly loaded plate was placed in front of him. There was another consideration to take into account, of which no one else was aware. His bitter hatred of Colonel Schroeder. He did not want to ease his lot in life, and truth to tell, he would be delighted if the Colonel failed dismally in his new command and was ordered home in disgrace, just as long as that failure did not redound to his own discredit. He stared hard at Schroeder as he toyed with the idea of refusing him. He knew all too well what that one had in mind, and he turned his attention from the Colonel to his wife. Katinka looked radiant this evening. Within a few days of arriving at the Cape and moving into their temporary quarters in the castle, she was fully recovered from the long voyage and from the captivity forced upon them by Sir Francis Courtenay. She was, of course, young and resilient, not yet 24 years of age, but that alone did not account for her gaiety and vivacity this evening. Whenever the bumptious Schroeder spoke, which was too often, she turned those huge innocent eyes upon him with full attention. When she spoke directly to him, which was also too often, she touched him, laying one of her delicate white hands on his sleeve, and once, to Van der Velde's intense mortification, actually placing her fingers on Schroeder's bony paw, letting them linger there for all the company to see and smirk at. It almost, but not quite, spoiled his appetite to have this blatant courtship ritual take place not only under his nose, but under the collective noses of the entire colony. It would have been bad enough if, in private, he had been forced to face the fact that the valiant colonel would soon be rummaging around under those rustling petticoats. It was insufferable that he must share his knowledge with all his underlings. How could he demand respect and sycophantic obedience from them when his wife was set on publicly placing horns upon his head? When I packed him off to Amsterdam to negotiate my ransom, I thought we'd seen the last of Colonel Schroeder, he thought sullenly. It seems I will have to take sterner measures in the future. And as he ploughed his way through all 16 courses, he turned over in his mind the various alternatives. Thunderfelder was so stuffed with good food that the short walk from the great hall of the castle to the council chamber was only accomplished with much heavy breathing and the occasional pause, ostensibly to admire the paintings and other works of art that decorated the walls, but in reality to recover his resources. In the chamber he settled, with a vast sigh, into the cushions of one of the high-backed chairs and accepted a glass of brandy and a pipe of tobacco. I will convene the court to try the pirates this coming week. That is immediately after I have formally taken over the governorship from Mynheer Kleinhans, he announced. No point in wasting any more time on this riffraff. I appoint Colonel Schroeder to act as Attorney General and to prosecute the case. I will take on the duties of judge myself. He looked across the table at his host. Will you have your officers make the necessary arrangements, please, Mynheer Kleinhans? Certainly, Mynheer Van der Velde. Have you given any thought to appointing an advocate to defend the accused pirates? It was clear from Van der Velde's expression that he had not. But now he waved a pudgy paw and said airily, "See to that, will you? I am sure one of your clerks has sufficient knowledge of the law to perform the duty adequately. After all, what is there to defend?" he asked, and chuckled throatily. "A name comes to mind." Kleinhans nodded. "I will appoint him and arrange for him to have access to the prisoners to receive their statements." "Dear God!" Van der Velde looked scandalized. "Why would you do that? I don't want the English rogue Courtenay putting all sorts of ideas into the man's head. I will set out the facts for him. He need only recite them to the court." "I understand," Kleinhans agreed. "It will all be ready to hand over to you before I step down next week." He looked across at Katinka. "My dear lady, you, of course, will wish to move out of your temporary quarters here in the castle and into the much more commodious and comfortable governor's residence as soon as possible. I thought that we could arrange an inspection of your new home after the church service on Sunday. I would be honored to personally conduct you on a tour of the establishment.
That is kind, sir.
Katinka smiled at him, glad to be the focus of attention once more. For a moment, Kleinhans basked in the warmth of her approval, then went on diffidently. As you can well imagine, I have acquired a considerable household during my term of office in the colony. Coincidentally, the cooks, who prepared the humble little meal of which we partook this evening, are part of my own span of slaves. He glanced at Van der Velde. I hope that their efforts met with your approval. When the governor nodded comfortably, he turned back to Katinka. As you know, very soon I shall return to the old country, and into retirement on my small country estate. 20 slaves will be far in excess of my future requirements. You, Mefrou, voiced your interest in purchasing quality slaves. I would like to take the opportunity of your visit to the residence to show you those creatures that I have for sale. They have all been hand-picked, and I think that you will find it more convenient and cheaper to make a private acquisition than to bid at public auction. The trouble with buying slaves is that those who look good value on the auction block can have serious hidden defects. It is always comforting to know that the seller has sound and sufficient reasons for selling, is it not?